listening to the Running Channel podcast with me, Sarah Hartley, my excellent co-host Andy Bradley, and our button presser, or pressing, depending on whether you ask me or Andy, extraordinaire Rick.
Oh, what a lovely intro. That's the best one I've had so far, actually.
I know, don't get used to it, it's going to change things.
Yeah, and a casual grammatical dig at me there, I think. So every week on the Running Channel podcast, we take you through one major topic in the world of running that we hope will be interesting to you, as well as tackling the latest news and your questions, probably most importantly. So let's get stuck in.
So our topic for today's episode is our favourite training sessions for 10K. But first, let's have a little bit of a catch up. Andy, how's your week been?
It's been amazing. We had one of our run clubs in London last night. We had an amazing group of people come. It wasn't raining this time, which definitely helps. And just, I had the most wonderful conversations. A lot of them about the podcast. Loads of people had already been emailing in or had really specific questions based on what we've been saying, to the point where they're asking me about stuff that I'd forgotten that I'd said.
What type of stuff were they asking you about? Was it more about, you know, your family situation, how many children you have? Have you ever run a marathon?
Is anyone here called Jenny? Because everyone was naming their Strava titles.
So yeah, for reference, from a previous episode, that was very much a Strava title. If you think your Strava title is something like Park Run with Jenny, that means we think Jenny is slow.
Yeah, and that was from trending on Instagram, Laura Green's reel, which is excellent. Go watch
so
that.
So good.
But have you been out for a run this week, Andy, apart from the run club?
I did. I snuck out on the excuse of testing a rather beautiful pair of shoes that I've been sent, which I'm not allowed to talk about. So that was nice to escape the mayhem at home with the, you know, the
17 children in the
yep.
bus.
Yep, brilliant. Funny enough, they didn't ask me about the 17 children, but they did ask me about how many pina coladas you regularly have before a podcast each week. So
I've had a really light week, actually, drink-wise.
And running.
No, generally. But I did run for 15 minutes non-stop, which is the most that I've ran in over 2 years, as you know. So
that's incredible,
15
yeah.
minutes right. non-stop. And it felt amazing, actually, because obviously I've been run-walking as I kind of get back into it from the injury and the surgery that I had. But 15 minutes and got there and then had my gait analysed and, you know, both legs still working. So fantastic.
That's a winner. Well, speaking of both legs still working, Sarah is now, what are we, recording on a Wednesday. You're running a soccer marathon this Sunday.
Yep, let's talk about me.
Yeah, yeah, bring it back.
Bring it back to me. Great that you guys have been out for one run. I've got to run 26 miles in like 3 days.
And travel across the other side of the world.
And travel across the other side of the world, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jet lag's a state of mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is my mantra for you.
Who needs sleep? I think it'll be fine.
I think you look really relaxed though, Sarah.
Thank you. I feel like a duck right now. My little legs are really paddling super quick. I've already made one error in that in Japan you need loads of cash and I've left it too late.
So. You need loads of cash? What, they don't use cards and stuff?
Yeah, people keep telling me that apparently it's really hard to use your card in Japan, but I'm going to have to now because I've left it too
that
late.
That sounds like it must be fake news, I haven't been
true.
To Japan for a long time.
Yeah, but you're not going to Japan. So
yeah, so better to be prepared.
Yeah.
And genuinely, I've seen and been talking to you about your training. We've been talking about it on the podcast, but your training has gone really well and I'm excited for you to hopefully enjoy it out there.
Yeah, I'm excited. I got texted through my training for this week and my coach, Andy, just put the marathon as Sunday long run with friends. So that's what I'm thinking.
Nice. Do you feel like you're properly tapering this week as well? Because you were, you know, a little bit upset that you weren't tapering enough.
Yeah, last week I was like, wow, I'm still running so much. And this week I'm like, oh, I've got to go out for a run. Oh no. But yeah. It's only tonight I've got three lots of 3-2-1 minute intervals at 10K pace.
Nice. So to get legs turning over, but not too much volume.
Yeah.
And then really excitingly, not only is this your first trip to Japan, but more importantly, I think next week's podcast is going to be being recorded almost straight after the marathon.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very soon after. So stay tuned for that. If you've got any questions that you want me to answer immediately post-marathon, send them through.
Yeah, and then someone else have to remember them for you, I think.
Yeah, I'll be struggling to read them after running. Yeah. But yeah, no, that episode should be super exciting. If I'm still coherent,
maybe it's better if you're not. Yeah. So yeah, there's going to be a big time difference. I think you're 7 hours ahead of us. Mm-hmm. And we're going to try and record it your like early evening and our morning in the UK. So it'll sound a little bit different, but it's really exciting for you to be able to do it straight after. So we get the kind of real reflections, that the emotion.
The real, how are my legs actually feeling?
Raw Sarah.
Raw Sarah. Yeah, I apologise in advance for what you're about to hear.
Not just the legs, we had some really lovely comments that I'd seen about, you know, Rick mentioned how emotional he was after his first marathon running London, and just that sense of achievement. So I know this isn't your first marathon, but, you know, you're travelling to a new country, like taking on a different challenge in a different way. And I think it's going to be you know, rewarding in a way that you can't yet predict, probably.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
Okay, well, we're going to move on and talk about 10K training rather than marathon. I know there's a lot of people in marathon training, but marathons aren't for everybody, and also 10K training in general is something that a lot of people are interested in. It's a stepping stone to running a little bit further. Or if you're an experienced runner and you just want to get faster at running 10K, then there's ways that we can do that. And so we decided to just chat about the things that we like doing. And last year, Sarah took on the amazing challenge of trying to break 45 minutes in front of an audience where you were the only person on the track, which was terrifying.
Such a bad idea. But no, it was super fun. I had my paces with me at all times as well. So it wasn't, apart from the final lap, it wasn't just me by myself, although it is quite scary when you're the only one that's running the whole time. There was a lot of pressure.
Yeah, the scrutiny of people sort of watching and keeping an eye on the clock. And
feel like it's 1% of what you would have experienced at the Olympics, but I like to say that I can now relate.
Yeah, I wouldn't diminish it though. Like it's a different thing. At least I had years and years to build up to that. And I suppose the way I used to treat pressure was that, you know, I'd been training for a long time in order to experience that pressure. So if I hadn't managed to, you know, get to a major championships or something like that, then I wouldn't be able to experience that pressure. So I'd actually been training hard in order to end up putting myself under that pressure. And I know that we had a chat before you took on that race, and you walked a lap of the track in the same way that I would have done before the Olympics, the world champs, with Andy, where he's just like, let's just walk a lap. It's
and
much
he
easier
calls
to chat.
It his office as well. Yes. He's like, before you go on your run, we're just going to do a lap in my office.
Yeah, funnily enough, when I was training, we used to refer to the 1500 meter start line as my office. So like, even if I was doing 400 meter reps or, you know, even number of laps, we often would start it at the 1500 meter start, which is the start of the back straight, which is a strange place to start on the track. It's not the start finish line, but it was kind of getting used to that's where I started. That was my work. My office. But we've digressed already.
Sorry.
Not talking about 10K.
Back to 10K. It was actually interesting last night as well. So Jess Piasecki was there doing a Q&A with us at our run club. And she was talking about how you would think someone who is running at her level, she is the second fastest marathoner in the UK of all time.
Yeah, 2:22. Seville
incredible
last year, yeah.
Time. But you would look at someone who's training for marathons and think, oh, okay, if you're a professional marathoner, you must be training for a marathon all year round. Yeah. But actually, no, she goes into blocks for marathon training, but she also does 10K training in between. So she'll do a period of training where it's 10K focused and then go into a marathon block. So that's why 10K training is so useful. It, not just if you want to target the 10K distance, but if you are someone who's fallen in love with marathons, but doesn't want to be running ridiculously long every weekend, 10K training is a good one to fall back into.
Yeah, so she was saying right now we're, what is it? 6, 7, 8 weeks out from London Marathon, which is her race target. And then this is where she's really starting to do the marathon specific stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it is an extreme case. She's obviously very fit year round. But yeah, periodizing your training and breaking it up into different key focuses is definitely a way of helping you to keep it interesting and to get fitter more quickly. And to the variety is the key. So I think we've both got our own picks. I wonder how we haven't discussed it.
I wonder if we're going to pick the same. Can I go first?
Yes, please do.
So when I was training for my sub 45 minute 10K, I used the Running Channel training plan, which you can download for free on our website.
Nice plug.
That is a plug. That is a 3-day a week plan. I changed it into 4 days a week just by adding in one kind of extra easy 8 to 10K run.
Because you're a badass.
Because it wasn't enough. But my favorite session from that plan each week was the interval session. Yep. I always went to the track to do it and it was super fun. And so if I had to pick one favorite training session from that whole block, which I think this was repeated a little bit throughout the plan in lots of different variations, and it makes such a big difference. And it's pretty much the session I'm doing tonight. So it translates into different distances as well. So it is an Andy Hobdell special, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1s. So this specific one is from the 12-week plan, I think.
And that's time, not distance, right? So 5 minutes, 4 minutes.
So it's two sets of 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute. And then in between each of those times, you get 1 minute's rest, which can be, depending on how you're feeling, it could be walking, it could be jogging, it could be running, however you feel. Try not to stop in those recoveries because it makes it so much harder to get going again.
Ideally, you'd keep jogging, I think, if you can. But it might take a little bit building up to that.
And then in between the sets, so once you've done one lot of 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you then take 3 minutes recovery. Again, ideally jogging, but if you need to walk for a little bit, that's absolutely fine. And then you go back into those 5, 4, 3, 2, 1s. And all of that is at 10K pace. So at the end of that workout, you've got 15 minutes, bang, 30 minutes, sorry, banked.
Yeah, that's maths.
Maths. You've got a really solid 30 minutes banked at your kind of 10K target pace. And then as you go on, I think I ended up doing three sets of that. So I was getting 45 minutes at 10K pace with the recoveries. And then it all started to piece together, because the hardest thing over 10K I've always found is that it's so much longer than 5K that it feels really daunting at the start if you're targeting like quite an aggressive PB pace. And if you break it down and do our favorite thing.
Oh, are we chunking?
Chunk it. Yes. Chunk a little bit.
Where's that merch?
It makes it feel so much easier. And this is what that session did for me. I think this was the session where I went, okay, 4:30 per kilometer. I might be able to do this for 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's the 45 minute 10K pace. A progression of that workout is to, because it's easier to run faster on the shorter the reps get, is to do it at a slightly progressive pace, so you get quicker each rep, so 5, 4, 3. So the 1 minute rep ends up being the fastest, which means then you take that 3 minutes recovery afterwards.
Yeah.
So there's loads of variations. And then if you really want to do it hardcore, you can flip it around and go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which I think is mentally much harder.
Yeah, no, not a fan.
Okay.
That's a no from me. What's yours?
Oh, well, see, you've picked, I would also say interval training. Like, I think we hammer on about variety. And so maybe the exciting thing to talk about is the interval stuff, because they might be different versions of things people haven't heard of, and that can make your training more exciting. So I'm going to go and try that. So if you do go and try any of these workouts we talk about, then email us at podcast@therunningchannel.com. Let us know what your favorites are. But I hated what you just described. I've briefly touched on it on the podcast before about how running to time really doesn't suit my psyche. So going for a 3 minute effort and almost doing, when I did that same workout as you, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I'd have just done it on a continuous loop around a park that was hopefully a few miles or 5, 6 miles worth of running, so that I never repeated myself, and that was what kept it interesting for me. But then that made it hard for me to measure whether I was running the 3 minute in one set as fast as the 3 minute in the next one, because I didn't have like a lamppost or a track to run around. So yeah, not too surprisingly, my workouts are track based, because that was my office that we talked about. So the session I want to talk about is 4 lots of 2K reps, and they're split each time into different paces. So the 2K is 5 laps of the track. You know, it's a mile and a quarter, I guess, in imperial measurement. So the first one of the four would be at your 10K pace. Even pace the whole way through. Then you take 3 minute recovery, where you'd ideally try and jog. I would have tried to jog a whole lap of the track in that 3 minutes. And then another 2K, but this time alternating pace. And so I would have alternated between 10K and 3K pace. So
is that for each lap?
Yeah. So of the 5 laps, you can start the first time you do this workout by alternating 10K, 3K, 10K, 3K, 10K. Because then you only have 2 faster laps.
Yep.
But then actually, if you the build up there is swapping that around, so you end up with 3 really fast laps, and that's much tougher. And so I appreciate not everyone knows what their 3K pace is, but just treat that as 5K and a little bit faster. So a little
bit
faster.
I don't think I've ever heard of 3K pace before.
Well,
you'll know if you've hit 3K pace when you get to the end of the lap and you're like, that was too
fast.
That's
it.
Yeah,
that's it, I'm done.
Let's leave it there.
That's worth bearing in mind that like not everyone has... You know, I used to race 800 metres, 1500 metres, 3K, 5K. So for me, they were very distinct paces. But in this case, just think of it as 5K pace, maybe a little bit faster. The rest of the session is another 2 2K reps. So you've got 3 minutes recovery after each one. You've done the alternating one as your second rep. Then you go back to 10K pace for number two. And then the fourth one, instead of doing alternating, what I would then do is move through the gears. So I'd start at 10K pace, maybe slightly slower. And the goal was that every lap of the 5 laps, so every 400 metres of your 2K, you had to get faster and then finish at 3K pace, ideally a little bit faster than that. So you're kind of all out for that last lap. And so that whole workout takes you through so many different, we always called it going through the gears, to practice the different types of paces. And ultimately with 10K pace, in that being your easy pace, that's why it's only 8K of volume. You start to think of 10K pace as being a bit more comfortable.
Yeah, because I do think that for me is when I kind of unlocked being able to hit a PB, is when I was like, oh, okay, actually this pace isn't right up in terms of what I'm running is the hardest thing. Like, you definitely, we always talk about you have to run either side of what your goal pace is, whether that is for 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon, whatever you're targeting, you need to make sure that you're going a bit faster and a bit slower within your training week.
Yeah, so many people get one pace and they're like, I don't have any other paces, but then you need to try to find them. So like, you just do them in strides or short efforts at the end of a run, just be like, well, can I run faster than this?
Yeah.
Because you just settle into this rhythm that becomes natural and comfortable for you.
We had an incredible example of that in when we were doing our training camp in Lanzarote. We did an interval session, and everyone's usually in an interval session, you will head off super, super quick, and then your last lap, you'll be absolutely trying to go faster than that first one, but you might not hit it. Whereas everyone there wasn't really used to going that fast. So actually their last lap was their fastest, because each time they ran, they were like, oh, yeah, I can go a little bit faster.
Yeah, and that, you need to find that in training, like, to test that out, because you shouldn't finish every training session on your hands and knees completely all out, 10 out of 10. But if you don't find where your limit is, then you might also be holding yourself back a little bit. And we made people, when we did a hill session out in Lanzarote, we made people run the second to last rep the hardest. Mm. And then funnily enough, the final rep, they actually were able to do just as fast as they'd done the first few.
Yeah. But
mentally, I think they would have saved something. And everyone always goes slower on the second to last one and then really fast on the last one. But forcing yourself to do it on the penultimate one, or maybe even the effort before that, does fundamentally change the mentality of it, which I think is a good mindset to get into.
Yeah, so give that a try. If you've got an interval session coming up, try on that penultimate one to see whether you can push yourself a little bit further, because that's always the one that I find the most difficult. But if you go in with that attitude, the last one will take care of itself. So you're listening to the Running Channel podcast. It's question time soon, so stay tuned for that.
It's almost time to answer your questions, but first, every episode we pick a news story from the world of running to chat about here. So Sarah, what have you got?
So I've got a bit of a sad one this week, but I feel like it's very, very important to talk about. So the Southern Lakes Ultra is a beautiful looking ultra marathon in New Zealand. It's 250 kilometers over 7 days, 6 stages over a week.
Yeah.
But in this year's race, unfortunately, 110 athletes were left trapped after some really, really bad weather. I think whenever you sign up to something as long as an ultra marathon, when I signed up to my first one, I did. The thought that crossed my mind is, what happens if I'm left in the middle of Thailand without and unable to get out? Yeah. And these people, no one lost their life, which is incredible. Some had to be helicoptered out, but they all made it back safe. But I think it's just a really important story to highlight that there are incredible races taking part all over the world, but safety is so, so key. And the longer it is, the harder it is to keep people safe.
Yeah, I think for me, the most interesting thing here, thankfully, it's a positive story in the way that people have been rescued. Obviously, they've been put through kind of difficult conditions and so on. But to my knowledge, everyone's okay, like you said. And it seems to me, I haven't done, you have taken on an ultra marathon in Thailand, but I'm always thinking about the logistics of it. Like, I've got friends who've organized events in the UK up to kind of half marathon and marathon, and just the logistics that go into that, you know, that people are quite spread out over that distance. So if you're running hundreds of kilometers over several days through some of the most beautiful places are often the most remote. So keeping people safe and it shows how important things like the mandatory kit lists are. And I think in this case, everyone had to carry some kind of transponder for their location.
Yeah, so it was compulsory for everyone to carry a personal beacon. Yeah. And that is the most key thing that you can take, because with the best will in the world, I finished Thailand ultra marathon. It was 54 kilometers. And at, I think, 50 kilometers, my phone died, my watch died. Luckily, it was very, very well marked out.
Yeah.
And I did have a kind of beacon with me that I could have pressed if I thought I was in kind of any kind of danger. And I did find my way back, so it was fine. But in that moment, it did go, okay, I'm only 4 kilometers away from the end and I know where that is.
Yeah.
But if I've fallen over here, I've got no way of contacting them without that personal beacon. So if you're taking on a long race, definitely, like, there's so much to think about, but do think about the safety element of it.
Yeah,
as well.
And we're so reliant on technology. I think, like, we often, you know, we talk about using our watches for navigation and everyone's comfortable using their phones. But if you don't have signal, you can still have GPS on your phone. But if you haven't had signal that loads the map to show you where you are on a map, or you haven't preemptively downloaded the maps to work offline, then that could be a problem. But ultimately, if you're still reliant on things that have battery life, then that's something to be aware of as well. So compass, maps, like, I guess people don't want to carry extra weight, but, you know, if you're exploring places or not in an organized race, then definitely you need to be prepared to be kind of off the grid and navigate back.
Yeah, and if you're doing kind of self-supported, kind of self-navigated stuff as well, I know loads of people in the UK especially take on challenges like this every year, and you can hire or buy, like, little trackers as well. So that's definitely worth looking into if you're doing, I know everyone is out in the mountains bagging incredible challenges and goals.
Yeah, it is scary though. I think it's so scary when you hear about, you know, people, when you might get stuck on a run and you're in the middle of nowhere and you've got no phone signal. Luckily, I'm on one of those phone networks, Donkey Mobile, I don't actually get any signal in my own home in central London.
Right.
So I'm always prepared.
Whereas out
to
on
be
the
honest
mountain,
you.
You're fine.
I've always got a flare walking around Islington just in case, you know.
Yeah, I think it's just, actually, just to summarize this one, I'm just amazed at what a good job so many event organizers do to keep people safe and to put these things on, because people are looking, I mean, increasingly these races didn't exist really 10, 20 years ago, and people have looked for a challenge beyond a marathon, and want to experience that adventure and that sense of accomplishment and to try something else new. So yeah, hats off to the event organizers that do an amazing job, and obviously events have struggled the last few years with like being shut down due to the pandemic. So yeah, let's go back, get back out racing, me included. Andy, come on, pep talk yourself.
Do it.
This marathon's happening.
This is just Andy's internal monologue. Come on, Andy, you can do it. Yeah. Just head out.
That's my monologue every morning, just to get out of bed.
Get those kids in the car. Get those kids
in
the car.
Get them in the bus.
Get them in the bus.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Like Noah's Ark.
Wow. Okay.
Right, go on, Andy. What's your story?
My mind's totally different. So I saw this thing where a US company called Aris Composites had done a study into the best and worst running cities. It's US focused. And I was like, I don't, why is a composite like engineering company doing a study about the best places to run?
I really hope this gets more interesting.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Okay. Well, it turns out they make carbon plates for running shoes. So they've got a vested interest in kind of news stories about where is good to run. But I just thought it was interesting how they ranked the cities and whether these things are how you would consider what makes a good place to run. So they only ranked cities over 500,000 inhabitants. So,
oh, can we guess what their categories are?
Yeah, so they used four different kind of weighted scores for four different categories, and then they gave them an overall score, and then that was how they said they were the best or the worst places to run. Right. So it's four things you've got to come up. What four things would you rank a city on or a place for running in?
Quality of pavement.
Quality of pavement.
Oh, that's quite...
Or like place...
That's the most obvious.
What do you need to run?
I was...
Shoes and somewhere to run.
Elevation, surely.
Oh, elevation. Neither of these things. I mean, maybe quality of pavement might have come into one of them. It depends on how you qualify.
Surface quality?
Sort of, yeah. So one of them was proximity to a park. So like how close you were to a green space.
Right.
Okay.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So
Air quality. Yes.
Number two. We are
very
two
good.
Out of four.
Okay. What else do you need to run? Air? A park?
I'd be amazed if you get these last two. Like
density of population.
Kind of. It's not that, but like, what? I guess what risks would you run in a city?
Risk of being shot?
Oh, wow. I mean, that wasn't where I was going at all. I don't think that's specific to runners.
I think
runners.
It's more like traffic.
There we go. Right. Pedestrian mortality. So like how likely you are to be hit by a car, I guess.
I was kind of right, you know, pedestrian mortality.
Well, yes.
To be fair, safety. They must have had to rank it on safety.
It's safe. They haven't ranked it on safety of, in terms of, I guess what you're talking about in terms of street crime. But yeah, pedestrian mortality, air quality, proximity to a park. And then one final one, which...
Street lights. Litness.
No, it's not. These are all... See, this. We should have been involved in doing this survey. Because the last
lit
one...
lights.
Okay, this lit last lights. One is one where... anywhere in the UK would score really low on this, I think.
Ooh.
And it's not something that I think impacts running quality. It's weather related.
Oh, rain.
Yes.
Precipitation.
they called it rainfall, but very good.
Oh. Rainfall. Okay.
Scientist Sarah. Pedestrian mortality, air quality, how close you are to green space, and then how much it rains.
That was really good fun.
That was really good.
See, it started and you thought it was going to be boring.
Yeah. Speaking of precipitation, this isn't running related, but this was a poll in the Running Channel office this week.
Yeah.
Do you think we still need the weather on the TV?
Oh, yeah. As in, because everyone gets it on their phones. Yeah. I mean, Sarah is desperate to try and do the wonderful weather presenters out of their jobs a bit much, isn't it?
I always wanted to be a weather presenter.
Bear in mind that I think the weather presenters on TV are also like they're trained meteorologists. So that they're presenting for 5 minutes at a time on TV, but the rest of the time they're also...
I don't think they all are. And okay. They used to be. But I think
were you ever the... Because you were the royal correspondent, sports correspondent, politics correspondent when you're on the radio.
I was never the weather correspondent.
Okay, fair enough.
In fact, in one of my last jumps, they did scrap the weather at the end.
Did they?
But on TV, it's actually one of the most popular segments. So they'd on kind of breakfast TV. So they'd never scrap
it. It's just
it.
Nice, isn't it, looking at the weather?
I think so.
You can either grumble at it or you can go like, oh, a bit of sun. But I think
it's like being on the other side of a motorway when the opposite direction is backed up. When you're in the weather and you see that somewhere in the rest of the country's got like torrential
it's like
downpour.
Scotland, -5. Ha ha!
And
then it goes London, rain.
I'm not sure we even care what the best and worst cities were, but...
Is this still in America?
Yes.
You had a story, Andy. Sorry, continue.
Yes. Hey, it's just like reading one of those bedtime stories. Pay attention, children, as they're all running right.
You're not doing the fun voices.
The fun voices. Okay. I can't make all the cities rhyme. That was
his normal voice. He's got his brilliant podcast
please,
voice.
To please, the channel.
Yeah, I think I've got a podcast voice. This is very embarrassing. So, leading the city... I can't do it.
Oh, he's back.
Awful.
Yeah. So the best cities running were... I don't have the full list in front of me, but San Francisco was number one and Boston was number two. So San Francisco, actually, 100% of the population live within a 10-minute walk of a park. It's quite a cool stat.
That's cool.
It's very hilly, though. It's the home of Strava. So that could have something to do with it. And then Boston was number two.
Famous marathon.
They have got a beautiful, I think it's called the Emerald Necklace, that kind of threads, it's a green space that threads its way through the city from the center out into kind of the suburbs, which is really nice. So I have run in both of those places. But then the worst cities I haven't run in. So the worst two were Memphis, Tennessee was the worst. And then Louisville, Kentucky was second.
Okay, is this just US based?
It was just US.
Oh, right. I was going to say, this seems a bit biased.
Well, I imagine Aris Composites are a... So we're giving them a good plug here. So maybe... I don't know how many carbon plates... We've been talking about super shoes a lot, but I assume that's there. Having been in PR world before, you know, this is how you make a news story about your own company. So we've done them a service and give them a plug.
It's working.
Yeah.
Their plan has worked.
So we finished our news stories. You're listening to the Running Channel podcast. And next up, we've got your questions. If you've got any for the future, then email into podcast@therunningchannel.com.
Right. Time to pick your brains.
Ooh.
Here they come. The first question today is from Rohan, who emailed in and asked, which are more effective for training, interval sessions on a flat surface or hill reps?
I mean, we were talking about changing voices for the podcast. your question reading voice is incredible.
Well, I do like to please.
Such a professional broadcaster. Which are more effective for training, interval sessions on a flat surface or hill reps? You probably get more bang for your buck with hill reps, and then potentially they're slightly lower impact depending on how steep the hill is, because you're making contact with your foot at a higher height, so you're not having the same amount of pounding. So there is some evidence that you could return to hill rep running before you could return to kind of regular interval running, particularly on the road, because you're sort of a little bit more protected from an injury perspective. That's my first take. Sarah, which do you prefer, intervals or hills?
Intervals 100%.
That was quick.
You can, so with hills, you can also do it differently as well. Hills is obviously the hardest one to be able to execute because not everyone lives next to the perfect hill.
Yeah.
But you can do 30-second hill reps. You can do slightly longer hill reps. I think if you have never done hill reps before, you're going to see the biggest kind of jump in improvement from just starting doing hill reps compared to if you're already doing interval training. Ramping that up, you're not going to see as much of an improvement as jumping into hills, personally, from personal experience.
Yeah, I think that the hills exaggerate everything. So they make it harder. You have to exaggerate your running form. So you have to really drive your arms and get your knees up high in order to not fall over on a steep hill. I wasn't very good at knee lift. So hills were a good way of me helping myself to work on that form and that drive. You mentioned 30-second hill reps. I would definitely go to 45 seconds it's really interesting, I think, physiologically, that people can quite easily sprint for 30 seconds, pretty hard. But as soon as you make them go to 40 or 45 seconds, that extra 10 or 15 seconds is so different.
Yeah, we did it in Lanzarote on our training camp, and that 15 seconds hurt me every time.
Yeah, and I had a few people ask me, like, why are we doing 45 seconds, not 30 seconds? I was like, well, the reason that you're complaining about it is the reason that we're doing it, because it does make a big difference. So if you had to choose, I mean, I would alternate. Like, if you could only do one hard session a week and you were choosing between hills and intervals, I would alternate so that you don't get kind of stuck in that groove, because you obviously can't run as fast up a hill as you can.
You can get a bit more variety with intervals as well. There's a lot more that you can do.
Oh, exactly. There you go. Have you got another one for us, right?
Yeah, this one's from Wesley. And Wesley emailed asking, which YouTuber would you most like to collaborate with? I'd like to chip in to start off with. Wes, yeah. If you don't mind. One which isn't a pain in the arse.
Okay, right. Rick speaking from personal experience. He's got a friend.
Are we included in that?
I think we're relatively normal compared to some of the
I think we might get some emails into people who don't think, yeah.
I would like to collaborate with Max Vosch. He recently...
Oh, you stole mine. I was going to say that as well.
Yeah, sorry. He recently rode a tiny little bicycle across the whole country, and I would like us to make him run a marathon... somewhere ridiculous, the hilliest marathon in the world, or I would like him to run across that entire country as
He is very funny, very silly, British YouTuber. He's done some really funny stuff where he managed to trick people landing at Gatwick Airport that they might have been landing at Luton, because he bought out land near the airport and pegged out a massive sign saying Luton Airport, welcome to Luton.
I reckon a good Max Vosch one as well would be, he also, one of my favourite videos from him is he broke into a security conference.
Yeah.
I reckon we should do a video with him where he breaks into somewhere and runs a marathon and gets back out without people realising.
Yes, and then he takes the risk and we don't get in trouble.
Yes.
Yes, perfect. So I would, one of my favourite YouTubers is probably a guy called Mark Rober, an ex-NASA engineer. So he's science stuff, which I find fascinating.
Science stuff.
He just builds incredible things.
He's NASA.
There's that degree at
stuff.
Work again.
So I love him. He's a US-based YouTuber, millions and millions of subscribers, and makes incredible videos about these things that he builds, like world's biggest t-shirt cannon to fire t-shirts into the stand at events. All of that stuff. He tricks people who steal parcels off people's porches. I'm sure people would have heard of him. So he would be my pick. And then we should give shout out to other running YouTubers, probably like Ben Parks in the UK. Ben is running.
Ben is running. He's coming out with me to Osaka.
Yes. So you're sort of already collaborating with him out there.
Yep.
Yeah. You going head to head?
Yeah. He's aiming for between 225 and 228. So wow. no problem.
Okay. Nice.
Looking forward to speaking to you on Sunday.
Hi, guys.
Yeah, you're gonna sound great. But as to wrap this up, I suppose, email us at podcast@therunningchannel.com with your suggestions. If you know somebody who's a really prominent YouTuber who does something slightly different, maybe wants some help with their running, or we could do an epic challenge together, then we are all ears, because we're totally up for that.
Yes. And the more noise you make, the more noise we make. As in, no,
sorry,
as in, the more people that say something, the more likely they are to take notice, rather than, you know, Andy with his two Instagram followers sliding into their DMs.
Yes, I am not a big influencer. So
yet, Andy, yet.
Yeah. What is this space?
There's always time.
There is always time. Well, that's it for this week. You've been listening to the Running Channel podcast. We are genuinely so excited that so many of you keep coming back each week to listen to us. We've got big plans for improving this podcast, and a lot of them come from you. You let us know what you'd like to hear, and we make that happen. So please drop us a comment on social media, send us an email to podcast@therunningchannel.com, and if you could, then do us a small favour and rate and review on the podcast platform that you're listening to us.
And good luck, Sarah.
Thank you.
Yes, you're going to smash
it. Next time, you'll hear me very out of breath, very tired, very jet lagged, potentially having finished a marathon.
Ah, come back and find out how she gets on.